with the latest news now.
An 8-year-old girl has been killed and 10 other people have been hospitalised after a car crashed into a school in South London. The Metropolitan Police were informed of a Land Rover that crashed into a girls' prep school building in Wimbledon this morning. Detective Chief Superintendent Claire Kelland is urging anyone with information to come forward.
Our officers have already spoken to a number of witnesses and have viewed CCTV. If anyone has any information, please either call 101 or speak with officers at the scene. Any information that can assist as we try to work out what's happened today.
A man has been found guilty of the murder of a beautician who was killed when he opened fire with a submachine gun outside a pub on Christmas Eve. Elle Edwards was shot when Connor Chapman fired 12 shots into a group of people outside the Lighthouse pub in Merseyside shortly before midnight on December the 24th last year. The Cabinet Office has lost its legal challenge over the UK COVID-19 inquiry chairwoman's request for Boris Johnson's unredacted WhatsApp messages, notebooks and diaries. The department brought legal action over inquiry chairwoman Baroness Heather Hallett's orders to release the documents, arguing it should not have to hand over material that's unambiguously irrelevant. Facebook and Instagram owners Meta have launched their new social media app Threads, which went live in the UK at midnight. The app is being labelled as a rival to Twitter, with millions of people signing up within the first few hours of launch. Social media manager Chris London agrees that Threads will likely have an impact on their competitor.
I think Threads will have an impact on Twitter, and I think we can see that based off of the fact that over 5 million users have already signed up for it within the first few hours.
The UK Health Security Agency and the Met Office have issued a yellow heat health alert to 6 regions in England. The temperatures are expected to be short-lived, with thunderstorms following the heatwave. And London Underground workers are to take industrial action in a long-running dispute over jobs, pensions and conditions. The RMC said its members will take strike action from July the 23rd to the 28th. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Beth Argent.
Radio Works.
Helping charities to bridge the cost of living gap. Nationwide Building Society's community grant scheme is now open for charities to apply for up to £60,000. Here's Kirsty Hall from Nationwide Building Society.
Home is so important, and it's why we think everyone should have a place fit to call home. It's also why we created our community grants programme to bring local customers and colleagues together to find ways of supporting people in their own communities who are struggling with housing and making a difference when it's needed the most.
Radio Newark weather with the YMCA Village.
A mainly dry evening for most, with patchy cloud and some sunshine. Any cloud then clearing away to bring a cool evening with lows of 13 degrees Celsius.
Radio Newark weather with the YMCA Village, offering a range of classes for health, fitness and recreational activities, all delivered from exceptional community spaces by experienced friendly staff. See ymcanewarkshower.org for details.
Radio Newark.
Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
All weekend, shivers and butterflies.
Hello and good evening from Radio Newark Sport. This is Gorey. Welcome to everybody listening out there. To last week, we had a great start with the lads from Holy Trinity, and thank you to them. It was a brilliant, brilliant week. And this week, we have Newark Royalty with us. We've got Carl Greaves, and I'm really, really looking forward to this tonight. And a big thank you again to those boys last week. And after this little break, we're going to be chatting about Carl and how he started and where he is today. So really looking forward to that. How are you, Carl?
I'm good, Mark. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's a pleasure. And you've got a lot to talk about tonight, haven't we? So.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, so look forward to that and stay with us and we'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Radio Newark Sport, brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants for all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
Welcome back. Yeah, we're just going to get a record on in a second. But Carl, so we went to your gym yesterday to see us. That's the new thing happening at the minute. Let's talk about how it all started back in the day, yeah?
Yeah, a long, long time ago now. 1985, that was when I first got my passion for boxing, when I was in the local working men's club, and I saw Barry McGuigan win the world title. It was just fascinating. Couldn't take my eyes off the screen. And since that day, all I ever wanted to do was be a boxer. My stepdad, he introduced me to, he knew the local amateur coach, Dick Daubney, and he got me, he let me go down to the old Boulders and ABC, which is at the Grove Sports Centre on the back there, the running track. They had a boxing club there. That's where it all began. As a nine-year-old, I had a session there that night. He let me train. Unfortunately, they wasn't really allowed to start boxing until he was 11 back then for insurance purposes, and you couldn't fight till 11 anyway. So I went away, just set rings up in my back garden with strings and rope. Used to get all my friends round. We used to have one glove each and just knock the hell out of each other. great times, and we used to have a big picture, a poster in my bedroom of Barry McGuigan and Rocky Balboa. He was a bit, obviously, that was when the Rocky films come out, and that was another big part of my boxing career, watching them films growing up. And I finally went back to the boxing club when I was 11. He'd moved now to RHP.
Now, yeah. I'm going to ask you something here, because yeah. I remember playing football at RHP, and I have a feeling I saw you running. Yeah. Around the RHP field and doing all that training. Is that right?
Yeah, it would have been when, because I used to see all you boys footballing back in the day when you played for RHP. And, yeah, that's where it was. We moved there in the corner in an old shed. But we turned out some fantastic boxers over the years. And obviously it's what brought me on, really, being around good fighters. And, I went there with a couple of lads from school. They never come back.
Let's have a big shout out. Who was some of the lads that you was training with back then? Cool.
Back then you had, obviously, Darren Farrow was a lad that I really looked up to. He was a great fighter, Darren. A big inspiration to me growing up at the boxing club. We had Mick Coggins, we had Paul Braithwaite, we had Rennie Briggs-Price, his brothers. So it was great times.
Good mix of lads, yeah.
Yeah, great times. And then a few years later, Isham Pickering joined. He didn't start till he was 15. It was a bit of a natural Isham, but so it just went from there. We've had Carl Froch in the gym. He moved to Newark as a kid. His parents owned the Plough pub, and he boxed for RHP, had a few fights for RHP, and very naturally talented, but never really had his art in it. A little bit lazy, didn't really want to train.
Wow.
And look where he is now. He's a legend. It's unbelievable. He moved back to Nottingham and then got back into boxing. He lost a bit of art with it when he was over here. He was used to training in a plush Flash Gym in Gedling, the Phoenix. It was used to even have club shows there. It was that nice a gym. And then he moved to Newark, and he was in an old shed that was cold and damp. And I don't think he really liked it. He was a little bit spoiled growing up, and but then he moved back to Nottingham, and look where he is now. And it's unbelievable how we've all our paths have gone in different directions, but similar directions, if you know what I mean. So we've all done very well.
Yeah, you've done amazing. And as I said, you're Newark royalty, Carl, aren't you? But how hard did you work back then? How much training did you do?
I used to train regular. I think a few of the lads in the club will say that I was probably a little bit lazy, but I think I was never lazy. I was always dedicated, very dedicated. But obviously, when you're a young kid, you still want to do kid things and that, and you do mess about a little bit in the gyms. Even now, when I go in the gym and see the lads who's in my academy, the Kex Boxing Academy and the amateur club, you see them all talking and not hitting the bags like they should be. You know what I mean? You've got to keep an eye on them and push them. And that's how it was a bit like that back in the day with me. But I always wanted it. I was always very, very dedicated. And I wanted it more than anything. And it wasn't really until I got to 15 that I really began to shine. I entered the National Junior ABA Championships and had to box twice in one night to get through to the next stage. It was a Knots and Links round.
Okay.
And the first round, four lads was in the competition, was entered in that area, and only one could go through. And back then, you boxed twice in one night if more than one entered. Well, if more than obviously two entered, you had to box twice in one night. And I won both them fights. I won every fight all the way through to the national final at York Hall Bethnal Green, and that was a massive thing. The first time anybody from Newark had ever reached a national final. Like I say, we'd had some very good fighters. After me, Ishan Pickering went on to win the national title, which was a great achievement. But at the time, I was the first person to get to the national final, York Hall Bethnal Green, and I boxed a local hero from London called Benny May. And a few weeks before that, they did a series on him, The Teenage Diaries. Obviously, the older generation remember it. It was like they followed a young up-and-coming athlete, should I say, and they followed his career. And at the end of the program, it showed you him fighting all the way through. At the end of the program, it says Benny Mays. It showed you him winning the semi-finals, and I didn't really know what weight he was at. And then next minute, it was Benny May, 54 kilogram, Class B finalist, opponent to be confirmed. And obviously, I'd already won my area over here, and I rang the old Dick up. I said, Dick, I said, just been watching that. I said, is that one fight? And he went, what's his name? I said, Benny May. He said, yeah, you've got Benny May in the national final. I couldn't believe it. I lost a close fight on points, but from that experience, from going through having like a 50-50 record up till I was like, from like 11 to 15, and then got to the national final, my confidence just grew. I become a different fighter.
Mm.
I then got a letter through the post saying I've been picked to train. Well, I'm picked for the Young England squad, which was another massive achievement. No one from Newark had ever done that. And I went all the way to Crystal Palace, where they used to do all the, it's now Sheffield, but Crystal Palace was like the National Institute of Sport in Britain at the time.
Yeah.
And I went there all on my own. As a 15-year-old on the train.
Wow.
Very daunting again. I never forget the route I got there. And I got to Crystal Palace and I was around some very good fighters who had met going through into the national championships. And then obviously I turned senior at 17. In the meantime, I'd got to the national semis twice and obviously into the senior ABAs, and I kept coming up against a fighter called Craig Spacey, a very good fighter, European gold medalist, and he beat me three times. I could never get past him. Very good amateur, good fighter, and funny enough, we turned pro with the same manager, and we used to be very close in the end. We used to spar a lot and become good friends.
Well, let's just hold it there, because that's your amateur days. Let's we'll take in break and then we'll go into the pro side of it.
Yeah, great.
So that's great. And speak to you in a minute. Cheers, guys.
So you're a big boy now and you'll never let her go. But that's just the kind of thing she ought to know. Tell her about it, tell her everything you feel. Give her every reason to accept that you're for real. Tell her about it, tell her all your crazy dreams. Let her know you need her. Let her know how much she means.
You with Smith's Timber Merchants for all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
The YMCA nursery at the Village is now open and your children are going to love it.
It's a wonderful space, inside and out, with toys and games to inspire curiosity and creative play.
Our chef prepares fresh, seasonal meals every day.
And the space is calming and natural. Children just love being here.
We cater for children from babies to 5 years old. And as we say, it takes a village to raise a child. For more details, see us online at YMCA Newark and Sherwood.org/nursery or call in for a chat at the YMCA in Newark. The YMCA Nursery at the Village. Here for you.
Timber! Yeah, and lots of it too. In fact, at Smith's Timber Merchants, we sell the right types of timber necessary to get the job done properly. Mouldings, plywood, fencing, decking, gates and doors, plus all the accessories you'll need, like screws, bolts, latches and hinges. In short, you could say we nail it every time. And if you want good advice, well, you've come to the right people. Find us on Appleton Gate, Newark. Smith's Timber Merchants. Phone 702-573 or visit smithstimber.co.uk.
And welcome back to Radio Newark Sport, where I've got Carl Greaves with me this evening, and really enjoying chatting to him about his amateur side of things and how he started. Just wanted to go back into that a little bit, Carl, and just delve into the diet side of things, because I know you lived on Cliffnock Lane, and I just wondered whether the chippy was part of that training diet.
Yeah, it was sometimes, yeah. We used to have a bit of fish and chips, yeah, most nights. No, not really. My mum really was a good cook, to be fair. She did, that's one thing, she's really good at cooking. Did her best for me, bless her.
But when you...
She didn't really understand the diets. When we look back now, it was always full-fat milk and butter and, you know what I mean, there wasn't really anything, you know what I mean, growing up, it was a bit different back then to what it is now.
I was going to say, because everything's about your diet now, isn't it? It's all professional and that. It wasn't quite like that, was it, back in the day?
No. It wasn't till... I can remember being in the arena gym one day, training, which was just across the road, down the road next door to, on Appleton Gate. And I remember feeling really weak. And I just said to her, there's a couple in there that used to train there. I can't remember the names. And I used to say, I always feel... She says, do you eat pasta? Do you eat many carbs? And I was like thinking, pasta, carbs? I think it was... When I was about 15, and I went home, I says, Mum, I said, I've been in the gym. I said, talking to a couple in there, and they said, I need to start eating pasta. She goes, oh, I don't like pasta, though. I said, well, you're going to have to start cooking it for me. So, yeah, she used to start doing me pasta. And then, like I say, that's when it really started kicking in for me, when I was like 15. And, I had a great career. I had 70 amateur fights, won 48. Was a two-time national semi-finalist, a national finalist, won the Midlands title most years, and boxed some very, very good fighters. And then obviously I boxed, when you got to 17, it was open class. You boxed anyone 17 to 35 years old. I don't think it's like that now. I think you think it's like 17 to 19 now, and then you box. I don't really know the amateur rules, to be fair, now. It's been that long, but... Yes, it was open class, and I was boxing fully grown men at 17 and holding my own and winning. I just seen a lot of kids turning pro who had boxed and either beat or had a close fight with. I just really got a little bit stale in the amateurs. I was only 19, but I'd had a long, hard career. I used to get good sparring. I used to travel around for sparring when I passed my test at 17. Dick never used to like it, but it was just to progress me, really, and sparring was the way forward. We used to get good sparring down at our gym with the lads.
Who's your coach back then, Carl?
It was, as an amateur, it was Dick Daubney and his son Gary and Mark. I mean, Gary was a good boxer and Mark boxed as well. But Dick did fantastic for Newark. He brought some great fighters through. He passed away a few years ago now, but a great man. He did really good for Newark boxing. And at the time, there was only one amateur club. There's three now in Newark. It's a big choice. But back then, there was one amateur club, and that's all we had to go. And like I say, it was self-funded. We just had to pay our subs. And we used to do, like, club shows and be involved with the Newark Rotary Club. They used to give a little bit of think as well, just to fund the club, really, and get new equipment.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what age did you turn pro?
Turned pro at 19, and at the time I was the youngest professional in the country. Okay. Yeah, like I say, I got to the stage where I was fighting very, very good boys in the amateurs, some top boys. Obviously Michael Brody, A.D. Lewis, they all went on to do great things as a pro. Mark Payne and some good fighters, Scott Lawton. And so I thought, you know what, so I went to a professional show at Mansfield, and I got introduced to John Ashton, who was from Kirkby and Ashfield, who was a manager at the time, a good fighter back in his day, boxed for the British Commonwealth European title, boxed Errol Bomber Graham, Okay. Yeah, but Sarah Obama going for the British, Richie Woodall for the Commonwealth, and Sam McClumbie for the European, and Sam McClumbie was a very, very good fighter. And I got introduced to him, and we had a chat, and he said, I can remember seeing you fight in the Midland Finals of the ABAs. He said, and what I saw, he always stuck in my head, was that I thought your style would probably suit the pro game a bit better, because you seemed to be a little bit of a slow starter, then you warmed into it. And obviously, pro fighting is longer rounds. Well, back then it was still 3-minute rounds, but it's longer fights. You know, I mean, he went to 4-3s, 6-3s, and so we had a meeting, had a chat. I kept it quite low profile, really. One of my biggest regrets, I should have maybe opened up a bit on it a bit more, because I knew Dick wouldn't have been happy about me turning pro. I didn't really discuss it with him, and that's one of my regrets. And I don't think he ever forgave me for it, to be honest. But, so I turned pro with John Ashton and made my professional debut on a foggy night, March the 22nd, 1996, at Mansfield Leisure Centre, and I fought a real tough kid. He'd had 8-1-4, lost 4. He was 27 years old. I was 19. He was a former world Thai boxing champion that had changed over to the boxing.
Yeah.
And we had a good hard fight, and I beat him by one round. I got it by one round. I dropped him in the last round to get the decision. Otherwise, it would have been a draw, and that was a big awakening, a big change. And I knew that I was in the man's game now, and it was ready to get tough, time to get serious.
Tough gig, wasn't it?
Yeah, very tough.
So how does it work, Cole? So you won your first fight.
Yeah.
That gets you on the ladder, does it, to somewhere?
Yeah, so I won my first six. Won my first six fights. You start thinking you're a little bit invincible and no one's going to beat you. And then on my seventh fight, back at Mansfield again, it all come crashing down. I did the weight wrong, tried to make a stupid weight, tried to go down a weight, and I was still growing. I was only 19. I was 20 by now, actually, yeah. I was 20 years old, and I was trying to get down in weight when I should have really been thinking about growing and letting my body go. And this is what I try and explain to all my fighters now. I can see young kids battling to make weight. And from my experience, I keep telling them, listen, your body's growing, you're doing more physical training now, you're training as a professional, your body's going to grow, your muscles are going to get bigger, you've got to go with your weight, you've just got to let it go.
Yeah.
You can't keep boiling down, because finally your punch resistant goes, you're losing fluid on the brain, and you're drying out, making weights, and it's just not right. I mean, I've been involved in a few tragedies over the years, and it's not nice to see. And from my experience, I always try and put it into lads' heads about the weight. But yeah, I went out there, and I can never forget, they played my wrong song, which mentally... You know, as a boxer, if you ain't got if the wrong song comes on that you've picked, you know what I mean, that's one bad start straight away. And one thing I did as well, I was 6-0 and he had the same shorts changed it for my seventh fight. And that's something I always say to the lads now, don't change your shorts if you're on a winning run. If you're winning, not been beating them shorts, don't change. Yeah, and I boxed a lad called Lee Armstrong. He was a fully grown man as well. And I remember dropping him in the first round, right uppercut, left hook. And he went down, and you could see with the experience, when you look back on the video, he took the count on the knee and got up at 8, and it was box on. But back then, if you got dropped and you got up at 2 or 3, it was box on. There was no mandatory 8 count. Anyway, he got up. I went steaming into him, trying to finish him. Next minute, bang, I'm on my arse. First time I've ever been put down. And I never forget, I can remember being, that's one of the only times that I got put down 5 times in my whole career. Only ever got knocked out once in 109 fights, amateur pro.
Wow.
And that was for the British title, which we'll probably go on to. But I never forget, and what I did was experience again, because I'd never been put down, and just the instinct, I jumped straight back up, but I boxed on at 3 what I was on about, and he just come steam. Anyway, it was just a toe-to-toe scrap, but I was just fighting on instinct for 4 rounds, and then finally in the 4th round, the referee just saved me for another day, basically. But it was a great learning experience, but I didn't actually learn from it because I still did the same stupid things that I did when I got beat. So I won my first six and then had a real bad patch. I lost a couple, and then my next six fights, I'd lost four of my next six. So I ended up with a record of 12 fights, 8 wins, 4 defeats. And then after that, that's when I started learning.
Okay.
I got my first crack, an area title, 10 rounds, 10 frees in Birmingham. It was a bloodbath against Irving Blake. Yeah.
So what we'll do then, so you've got through that era. So what we'll do is we're going to have a little break, and then we'll come back and talk about how it got you to where you are now. Welcome back to Radio New York Sport. I'm here with Carl Greaves this evening, talking about the years of pain and heartache he's had to put into his boxing career, and talked about how it all started, and we're just walking into his professional career. And you said you had a few losses, which was a bit of a learning curve for you, and then it took off a bit again, didn't it, Carl?
Yeah, my final loss was a 10-rounder for the Midlands area title, and I boxed, I was 21 at the time. I went to Birmingham as a way fighter, and again fought a lad, I think he was about 34, strong, tough lad. I still to this day thought I won the fight. It was an absolute bloodbath. I think I ended up with I looked like a panda the next day. I had a fractured nose. Both eyes was black when I woke up. And he had 16 stitches. He was just a warm. I had the old Forest shorts on, white, red and black with the Forest logo, and they were just pink. But that was my final defeat, and I learned so much. That was the fight that made me, to be fair.
Okay.
I learned so much from that fight. I learned a lot about myself as well in that fight. And I went away, regrouped, I come back, and my next fight, I think I got a routine win at Newark. And then my manager, promoter, John Ashton, was putting a joint show on with Barry Earn at Mansfield again, because that was his local venue. And it was on Eurosport back then, Eurosport, when she showed boxing. And I never forget, it got to about half eight, and if it had gone 5 minutes longer, the next fight, there would have been no time to have me on. He said, if this fight runs over 20 to 9, whatever, we're not going to have time to show, because the programme finished at 9. And next week he comes running in, you're on, kid, you're on Eurosport. And like, I'd not been on, no, it's the first time I'd ever been on TV. And we're fighting a tough journeyman, tough kid who'd had a good, he has a bit of a patchy record. I think he's something like 128, lost 38, something, a bit of a strange record. Very experienced, been in with some top boys. And I remember John saying, look, listen, don't try and knock this bloke out tonight. Just box nice, get the win, go home, be happy. You're on Eurosport, let's look good. He said he's been in with some top boys, far better boys than you. I thought, oh, thanks a lot, John. So comes walking out, ready or not, here I come. That was sort of like me walk out music, the jungle version. And anyway, it was a good fight. I remember Nicky Piper and what was his name, the Irish fella, I think Dave Boy McCauley, were commentating, and he was saying, look, it looks like Carl punches a lot harder than his record suggests, because I never really had a high knockout record, but I could proper wallop with a left up. Anyway, fourth round, he come, I hit him with a 1-2. And I could see him get angry, come charging at me, step back, left up, flattened him, knocked him out on Eurosport. And like I say again, the confidence just went higher after that. And then I never got beat for 3 years.
So where did that take you then for the next 3 years? European...
Well, no, I fought, still building. I fought for just a minor title, really. It's called British Masters. I won the British Masters title, like a stepping stone title. And then I got a shot for the British title live on Sky Sports July the 14th, year 2000, against Michael Gomez. Well, Michael Gomez was a formidable champion at the time. I think he needed one more defence to win the belt outright. He'd been knocking some good fighters out. He was like a big name on Sky Sports, signed to Frank Warren. And I got a crack at this British title. Ability wise, I think I was ready, but mentally, I wasn't really ready for all the press, the media. Still, really, what was a 24 then? I was getting like phone calls from the Daily, the Sun, the Daily Mail, having Sky Sports ringing me for interviews, radio, like a big radio stations, and it was all a bit daunting, really.
Nothing bigger than Radio Newark, then, mate, was it?
No, nothing. This is great. Fantastic for Newark, by the way, this is. And, yeah, so it just physically, just mentally drained me, really. And it was and I proper struggled to make the weight for that fight. I was like, my body was changing. I was still a little bit fleshy, and my body was changing. And I think I made the weight like a week before, and my trainer said, look, you're a little bit too light, you're going to have to put a bit back on. And I think he ended up going back up to 10 stone, he had to make 9-4. So I was sort of like 10 pounds over, a couple of days to go. And I was in and out of the sauna, in and out of the hot baths. And like I say again, just not obviously getting the fluids down me. And then after the weighing, you rehydrate, but it's not long enough, really. Mm-hmm. 24 hours seems a long time, but it's not when you've took so much out of your body. And I was in the fight. And the only time he ever got knocked out, he hit me eye on the head on the temple, knocked me out. I can remember being awake, and my mind saying, get up, but my body won't let me. Mm. I was just stiff, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Anyway, I got up, and I looked quite bad looking back on the video. I looked like I was quite in a mess. And, and I had concussion quite a bit after that for a while. It was a little bit worrying. And then same again, I rebuilt, took it away, won 6 fights on the trot. I had a couple of good wins. And in that win, I won the Midland area title for a dramatic knockout at the Grove Sports Centre. I knocked Nigel Senior. He was out for a long time, to be honest. A great knockout. And I got a crack at another rising star, another world-class fighter in Alex Arthur, who I'm in touch with to this day. We're good friends.
Okay.
And this was for the same title, the British title, live on Sky Sports, but a far bigger platform. It was at the Telewest Arena in Newcastle. It was sold out 11,000, December the 14th, 2002. The same bill as Joe Calzacchi and Ricky Atten, which was amazing. Amazing for me. I was around them all fight week and we all got on well. And it was absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable experience. And I put up a far, far better fight with Alex Arthur, who at the time, I think he had 14, won 13 by knockout. He was Commonwealth Games gold medalist. He was on a major contract with Sky Sports. He was a boxer of the year as well as same as what Michael Gomez was. So two very, very special fighters who I was unlucky to come up against for the British title. Mm-hmm. They were world-class operators. And I got stopped on my feet in 6 rounds with Alex, but I was in the fight, caught him with some very good shots, and we laugh about it to this day. He actually put it out on social media that I shook him to the boots with a left hook, and he don't know how, and he can remember he said that the old place was ringing the bells, but he never went down, so I said, I couldn't hit you that hard. But anyway, And then a couple of months later, I went away for a holiday. It was over Christmas period, went to the Canaries. And then I got a phone call off John saying, because by this time, Carl Froch was on the scene. He was doing big things in Nottingham. He was promoted by Mick Hennessy with BBC Sport. And John Ashton rang me, says, Carl, he said, you might have a shot of a lifetime of a world title. And I was like, serious? He went, yeah. I said, well, I'm coming off a loss. He said, yeah, don't worry about that. It was a loss against a very, very good fighter. You've got a great record. You deserve this opportunity. So he got me a crack at the vacant WBF super featherweight world title. Now, WBF isn't a prestigious world title. I'm not going to sit here and say I was an elite world champion, but I've got the bow at home. I've become world champion. I boxed a guy called Ben Odomati from Ghana, live on BBC Sport, same show as Carl Froch, who was actually doing a 6-rounder against Michael Monham, a guy that I know well as well. And there were some good fighters on the bill, and it was a 12-round fight. I got a real bad cut, I think, in the 6th round that McCorney did a great job with. And I went on to beat him convincingly on points over 12 rounds to become WBF world champion.
Well, some achievement
it
that.
It was amazing. Big thing for Newark. And I can never forget, I mean, old Tony Smith that used to be part of the radio was with the Newark Advertiser. Yeah. I never forget, he was sat interviewing me on his dictaphone while all being stitched up in the change rooms. They don't take you to hospital or anything. They stitched up there, and then it was quite a bad cut. I think he had 6 stitches in it. I used to get it's cut badly over my left eye, to be honest, over the years. I've had a lot of stitches. That's probably why my eyebrows aren't growing real well, because they're never to grow with. But and he always has a laugh about it today. He says, Greasy, I'll never forget, sat in that chamber with blood dripping down your face. And he said, but I tell you what, I was so proud of you. It was brilliant. And my career after that went a bit stale, to be fair. I won a world title, but I just still couldn't get that big fight.
Before we get to that next big fight, we're going to have a little break, and then we're going to carry on, because you've got some other things going on in your life as well, but
definitely
want to go on to that. So we'll see you guys in a minute.
Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
So, let's talk about you. Actually, let's talk about me, just for a bit, because I was like you. In 40-odd years, I hadn't done much exercise, but I knew I had to start. So, I got the Couch to 5K app. From not being able to run for more than a minute, 9 weeks later, I was running for half an hour. It's simple, it's free, and it's all planned out. With a little support, it's amazing what your body can do. Join thousands of monthly users. Download the free 1U Couch to 5K app now, because there's only one you. Yeah, and lots of it too. In fact, at Smith's Timber Merchants, we sell the right types of timber necessary to get the job done properly. Mouldings, plywood, fencing, decking, gates and doors, plus all the accessories you'll need, like screws, bolts, lashes and hinges. In short, you could say, we nail it every time. And if you want good advice, well, you've come to the right people. Find us on Appleton Gate, Newark. Smith's Timber Merchants. Phone 702 573 or visit smithstimber.co.uk.
Welcome back to Radio Newark Sport. I'm here with Carl Greaves tonight talking about his distinguished career of Carl. So we're just getting over to the point of he's won his world title fight and things weren't going as well as you thought after that, Carl.
No, I was still winning, but I just couldn't get that big fight. I had a couple of routine four and I think it was six rounders on decent shows, to be fair. But I just couldn't get a defence of the world title. And then, obviously, Audley Harrison was on the scene. Obviously, Olympic gold medalist. He got a big contract with BBC. And I actually remember meeting Audley and David A. in Tenerife in the Hotel Bougainville just before I boxed Michael Gomez. Well, 6 months before it was Christmas time, I always used to go away. Even if I went away with the lads, I always used to train. Mm. And I remember talking to him and... ironically, I ended up boxing on the same card as Paul Harrison and David A.
Okay.
Yeah.
Big names here, Carl.
Yeah. I've been around some big fighters over the years. Obviously, more so in the business side. But and I remember saying to John, I said, Paul Harrison's fighting for the WBF World Heavyweight Title. I said, is there any way you can get me defence on that? He said, let me do my best for you. Anyway, he come back, he said, and get you on that bill. He said, I've got a kid on it. They want to bring a kid back from America, originally from England in Leeds, but he based his whole career in America, called Carl Johansson. He said, he's meant to be special. He said, do you fancy the job? I said, definitely. Definitely. I'd read about this Carl Johansson because we had the same name. And then Boxing News, and I see it was my way, and I could see you were looking for that breakthrough fight. And I took the fight on a big platform, Wembley Arena. But what could go wrong in the build-up and on the around the same time did go wrong. Made a complete mess of the weight. I went £9 over the morning of the weigh-in. And anybody who knows boxing and knows how you get the weight off, I was in the hot bath. From 6 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock, in and out the hot bath to get this weight off. Now you're not allowed to do it, really. I'll sit here now and say most people still do it, but to get them last few pound off the day before weigh-ins, it isn't as bad. You'd never do it on the day. And my little girl was due around that time, so that was playing on my mind. Bridie May, obviously, she's 19 now. That's how long ago it was.
Wow.
My little girl was due any time there, and I overate after I'd made the weight, because I used to have it in my head that if I don't eat enough, I'm going to be weak. But I scoffed myself and overate so much. And this Johansson was a very, very good fighter. Very, very deceiving. They told me I could be on at 20 past 8. It was a BBC, live BBC fight. They put me on at 20 past 7. I sold three coach loads of, sold three bus loads of tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So they never got here until the fight was finished. That was on my mind as well. Anyway, got in there, and it just wasn't to be, to be fair. He was a very deceiving, good fighter, and I'd outgrown the weight. I should have moved up long time before,
that. And that was a defence of the WF.
That was a defence, yeah. And he turned out a very, very special fighter. He did. He went on to, he beat me. So basically, he dropped me in the first round. I got back into the fight, and I was in it. My manager was a little bit disappointed that I had to pull out. Got to the third round, got to the corner, and I could see three of my trainer. And you know, like they say, the old Rocky film, hit the one in the middle. But this was real life, by the way. You're not talking Rocky films. And anyway, he said, look, that's enough. That's enough. And he retired me on the stool. Really, I should have probably moved up after that or retired. But I got the chance to box in Gibraltar. I had a big history in Gibraltar. I got friends over there.
Okay.
Ended up getting married over there the second time. And trained over there, had camps over there, become very good friends with the trainer over there, Ernest Victory, all through Steve Noble, who's a local businessman, and he moved out to Gibraltar.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went out there a couple of weeks ago and we met up, and lovely people. And they touched me that much. I was on the local radio all the time, getting interviewed by the news. I used to go out running there for camps and used to give me the boot. I was more famous in Gibraltar than Newark, to be honest with you. And anyway, they put a show on out for me there. The first and only, well, there's been one more since now. It was a big Sky Sports show. But at the time, I was the first and only ever professional boxer to fight out there. And I won on points. But I knew it was coming to the end, to be honest. I knew it was coming to the end. I didn't have that motivation. I had one more fight in Newark after that and won that. And then, probably for my own good, really, I failed a routine. I had got called to fight for the British title eliminator again, which would have happened. I would have kept on at the same weight and never ended up moving up, which was absolutely ludicrous thinking about it. And I went for a routine brain scan they need to have every year.
Yeah.
And they found a slight change. And they said the change is obviously, we don't know if it's trauma or if it's from age or whatever. I personally think it was from dehydration. I went for the scan too dry. And they always say to you, when you go for your brain scans, make sure you get plenty of fluid down you. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of fluid around the brain, but I went there a little bit dry. I'd dropped a lot of weight again. And, so basically they said to me, look, there's been a change. What do you want to do? I was going to appeal it, but then I had to sit down with my family. By now, I had two girls.
How old were you, Cal?
I was only 28. Okay. Only 28, yeah. And we decided to retire. It was heartbreaking at the time, but looking back, probably the best thing that ever happened to me, because I'd have carried on until I couldn't fight anymore. That's how I was a fighting man, and it was in me. I always wanted to fox. I would have took some stopping for anybody to stop me boxing. This was probably what made me stop. And and then I just went straight into the business side,
which is an amazing thing to do as well, because you're promoting as well, and you've got a couple of good fighters on your books.
Went straight into the business side. Got me. I already had my trainer's license. Actually, I got that early. I got that as a little bit of a backup, because I love training, being around it, and that. So even out of camp, I used to just train fights, take them on the pads and that. But I finally got serious in the business side about 2005, 2006. Got my manager's license, and then I thought, well, if I'm going to be training fighters, they're going to need a manager. If I'm going to manage fighters, they're going to need a platform to fight on. So I got my trainers, managers and promoters license. I had all them licensed by 2007. It just snowballed, really. The word got around. I'm a well-liked lad in the game. I'm respected. As a fighter, I was well-respected as a fighter because they knew I never backed down. I was a tough kid.
Yeah.
I always got on well with everyone. I never bad-mouthed anyone. I got a lot of fights come to me. And then just snowboard. I've had every single champion from area level through to world level. I've been all over the place. I've promoted all over the country. It's just been a remarkable career, really.
Well, it's been an amazing evening chatting to you, Carl. And I know you're doing all that promoting. You've got yourself a new gym.
Yeah.
So you're working hard in the gym. We've got that going on as well. So, yeah, things have turned out great for you. And the 28th is an early time to finish, isn't it?
Yeah, but
as long as you've got that career now, which you have got, you're well on the way now, aren't you?
I know, but when you sit, I'm 47 now, and I just can't believe how fast it's all gone. I remember it all like yesterday, as you're hearing me talking, I know dates, I know who I fought, I know where it was at.
Yeah.
And, I went into the business side now. I'm obviously got a gym. I'm opening a new gym outside of boxing, an health club, weights and cardio, and health club that the old Anytime Fitness have took over there. It's going to be called NG24 Fitness. We've got an open day on the 22nd of July, 1 till 3. So it's all changing now, and we'll see where the future ends.
Well, look, Carl, many thanks for tonight. Really, really appreciate it. Just one thing before you go, I've done a bit of training with you.
Yeah, you have.
Me and Rakes here, Amit.
Yeah,
we've been there.
Yeah.
What's the chances of me getting a world title fight? No, be honest.
Very slim, maybe. You did very well. You used to enjoy it.
I did love it. It was brilliant.
You took to it, and we used to have good sessions, the lads, on a Monday, wasn't it?
It was on a Monday, yeah. It was brilliant.
We used to get a few of the boys down, and really good, mate. Yeah,
no, I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for tonight. Absolutely amazing. We've got Dean with his soul show coming up in a few minutes, guys. But thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Many thanks again, Carl.
Top man. Thanks
a lot,
Mark.
Tonight. Something wrong and you can't put your finger on it. Right then, roll to me. And I don't think I have ever seen a soul so in despair. So if you want to talk the man through, guess who will be there? So don't try to deny it, pretty baby. You've been down so long you can hardly see. When the engine stall and it won't stop raining, it's the right time to roll to me. Roll to me. Roll to me. And I don't think I have ever seen a soul so in despair.
On FM and up to date on social media. We are Radio Newark.
We love local. We love Newark. Radio Newark.
With the latest news now.
An 8-year-old girl has died and 10 people have been taken to hospital following a car crashing into a